Welcome to another bumper edition of the Fuel Podcast, brought to you by The Advertist, the new business development platform. You can find The Advertist at www.theadvertist.com. That's theadvertist.com. The Fuel Podcast is a veritable smorgasbord of new business protein. Frankly, if new business people were Vikings, then this podcast would be Valhalla. So before we set off marauding, here's our very own Loki, Jeremy Davis, to cast his spell on the world of new business and demystify the job we all know and love.
Of all the many clichés about new business development, my favourite is that it's some kind of dark art. Now, I don't know about you, but I've read all of the Harry Potter stories, and not once does the Professor of the Dark Arts even mention cold calling. Harry, Ron, and Hermione receive no guidance whatsoever from their various Defense Against the Dark Arts teachers in how to set up voicemail, protect their direct lines, or register for the corporate telephone preference service. And throughout the whole saga, he who must not be named is some bald, evil wizard guy, not the finance director, as in most client companies. The only sense in which new business is a bit like a dark art is that if it's done badly, things can go very seriously wrong, and it should only be attempted by trained specialists, such as witches, wizards, and business development managers. Another reason the dark art analogy is so wide of the mark is that it implies that new business could be conjured up by the marketing equivalent of waving a magic wand. If there's one thing we all know, it's that it doesn't work like that. There can't be many new business professionals who have not at some point deployed the line, "I can't just magic up new business from nowhere," or words to that effect. If there is a well-known cliche that can be applied to new business, it's the one about success being 99% perspiration, or Jack Nicklaus's famous soundbite, "The harder I work, the luckier I get." In fact, golf is a pretty handy analogy for new business in that it takes ages to master and is very boring to watch. One way in which new business people are like Harry Potter, at least since the introduction of GDPR, is that we've all been through an experience that's left us scarred for life.
The one thing about networking, and even doing the networking now online, is you're maintaining your presence and maintaining your connectivity with other people, and that comes back at you. As long as you keep doing it, and as long as you develop a character within your group, and you're known for doing certain things in certain ways, you will get people coming back to you regardless.
Straight off the bat, I want to say we're not ignoring what's going on in the world right now. It's not nice and it's not over, so I'm not going to get melodramatic until it is. This podcast is about looking at the parts of this gigantic engine that are still moving. If you want economic forecasts or pandemic predictions, there are plenty of other experts to provide those. The only experts you'll hear on this podcast are ones who know how to stay focused on making things work and generally tend to look at life with a glass half full vision. Our guests are either on the upswing already or are balls to the wall climbing that hill, but they're all moving forward. And today's guest is no exception. By a mixture of luck, judgment, and business sense, Ian Miller went all in on the fact that companies want to save money, and right now, there's no greater priority for all businesses. I've known Ian for nearly 40 years, and he's the consummate salesperson. Tall, dark, handsome, with an easygoing nature and a sharp mind. I want to bring him onto The Fuel because he's the absolute epitome of the type of guest we built the show around. He works in a non-marketing agency vertical sector, and although he's got a different take on what's needed in his world of new business, he applies the principles that all good sales professionals are familiar with. So without further ado, let's drop in on my chat with Ian Miller. I'll probably buy about two reams a year, I think.
Yeah.
Well, so anyway, I think we'll just kick straight into this, all right? Okay. Oh, so then, yeah, no, I'd like to welcome you, Mr. Ian Miller, CEO and Director of Business Solutions Provider Procure. Thank you very much for spending some time with us today, Ian. I know you're busy.
That's fine.
Well, firstly, I hope that you, your family, colleagues are all coping well.
Yeah, everyone seems to be coping well under the strain. Thanks, Keith. Yeah, good. And it's good to chat to you.
Well, I noticed that on my quarantine calendar, today is officially Loungewear Wednesday, which actually it comes after Moo Moo Monday. And I'm personally actually looking forward to PJ Friday, which is my favourite day of the week. Now, when we first conceived this podcast show, the idea was to interview leaders of all sorts of diverse industries and companies to find out how they do their new business. And one of the model examples that I wanted, the one that I had in my head all the time, was you, Ian. Now, I've known you for decades, literally, yes. Literally since the 80s. And so that's going on. I actually worked it out. It's 38 years.
Oh my God!
I know, it's horrible, isn't it? It's horrible. I mean, if back then, if we knew somebody that was 38, they were old, you know. But so anyway, back in those days where we were budding pop stars with more eyeliner, shoulder pads, and Diamante than Joan Collins. But I mean, even then, you were kind of unique because you actually had a proper job with a proper car and a regular salary, and you. But you worked for a paper merchant called Barnett's, and that was sort of back when companies used to buy a lot of print and use a lot of paper. And I still remember you turning up for rehearsals in the band, you know, from client meetings. And you always seemed so kind of professional and businesslike and stuff. But you've always been the consummate salesperson to me. You're a lovely chap to know. You care about what customers want, and you always seem to go kind of above and beyond the call of duty for clients. So I was just hoping, just briefly, can you just take us through your kind of personal business journey that brings you to where you are now, starting obviously with the sort of Barnett's back in the 80s, and see where we go?
Yes, certainly, Keith, not a problem. Barnett's was, well, I wanted to get a trainee sales position, and I'd looked for a number of companies, and this one came up, right. And it was just through the Telegraph, and there it went, and I was offered about three jobs at the time, and this one came up and was the best one, I thought, for me personally, and it offered me the training that I wanted in sales. Right. And
so you hadn't been in sales before then?
Yes, I had been in sales, but you know, it was retail, and I'd seen people coming through the door, and I'd done sold cash registers because I was trying to get on the road. I was quite young at the time, and it was the ideal opportunity. Barnett's was up until 1989, and after a while, you know, after the band split up, and I got back to concentrating on what I should be doing. I became one of the leading salespeople in the company, and all of a sudden people were beginning to knock on my door, and the printers I was going to see were talking to me saying, do you know this other company? I'm very interested in you. Yeah. I think you ought to go and have it. Anyway, before I knew it, I had two interviews with two different companies, and I decided to go with the one company. And of course, what they were trying to do, and I never really sussed it at the time, being slightly naive, was they were just trying to buy me out of my own patch. So because I was causing them devastation on their own, and they wanted to buy me out. And that's effectively what they did do. And it also, the other company that were in the background didn't want to do that. They actually wanted me for real reasons. So once I'd worked that bit out, I then went, hang on, I don't want to be here. This is not working out because they're not letting me see the clients I want to go and see.
Yeah.
So I went up sticks, and I'd only worked there for 9 months and went and worked for this other company. They offered me exactly what I wanted, more money, nicer car, and you just, in those days, you just
private
did.
Private jets.
Yes. So yeah, up sticks and went on to the next venture. And that next venture turned out to be because they believed in me a lot more. I can't say they're any different in that day and age. Paper merchanting was very similar sort of thing wherever you went. But there was just one particular chap who was actually a bit of a pain, and he made me think again. And that's when a very good friend of mine, Andrew Ingram, had started a small paper company in cut size, and I originally had started in cut size paper, in other words, office papers.
Right.
And had said to me, come and work for me. And he just banged on at me all the time, went on and on and on. He kept ringing me up and said, come on. He said, I kept saying, Andrew, you can't afford me. I'm, you know, too much money.
Man.
I just rang Andrew up and said, come on, let's do it. And I'll take the pay cut and I'll come and work for you. And, you know, the opportunity was to obviously become a director of the business and obviously have shares at some point and go from there. But that was a unique experience because it gave me a chance to, you know, right at the nub of a business. So one day I could be forklifting, to next day I could be selling, to doing the books, to doing. So between us, we ran the business. We ended up with about 8 people, something like that,
right,
in the business. But it was unfortunate because when price is moving up, banks not giving enough money out, and within 5 years we were growing very quickly and couldn't get the funding to enable our growth.
Gotcha.
And it's typical of what banks, especially bank managers, then they just were so frightened of companies that grew quickly.
They're very risk averse, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. So that one minute they were saying yes, which they did do, they said they were going to give us this overdraft, and that just would have taken us skywards. And literally a month later, he withdrew the offer once we dug into the overdraft. We were left stranded, and we had to. The business had to be sold. So,
so there we go. That's a weasel in the banking world. Would you care to name him so we can shame him online or something?
Oh, if he's still out there, yes. I can remember his name.
I tell you what, I bet he's. I bet he's ruining the day he made that decision, because obviously now, you know, you're kind of you've got your own you've got your own business up and running. Which is called Procured. Am I pronouncing that right? Is it Procured?
You are indeed. Yes, yeah. You are correct. Okay. Yes.
And so, how would you best summarise the role that Procure plays in the kind of modern business world? I mean, who are your ideal customers?
Our ideal customer is anywhere between about 1 million, 40 million.
Okay,
but that's sort of closing the shop. Yeah. It's wide and it's closing the shop a little bit, but that is changing by the day as it happens because we have a role in life, and that role in life sometimes means that we do talk to bigger clients and we can help them out, which we're finding today as we speak.
So in terms of the kind of services outside of the big one, which we'll come on to in a minute, I mean, what kind of services do you offer sort of these 1 to 40 mil turnover companies?
Well, we have a new strap line now, which is we are the purchasing team that's not on your payroll.
Okay.
And that is a good reason behind that, because when we talk to the businesses who want to use our services, it is literally they quite often don't know or don't have a purchasing team, or if they do, why not outsource it? Outsource it to a team like us. We know how to get to the nub of pricing for indirect spend. And that indirect spend can be anywhere from stationary PPE to mobile phones, energy, MPS. We even go into R&D credits.
Right.
So the expanse is quite wild, car leasing, but it's a business that has a need for all these things. And a managing director, or maybe the credit controller or financial person who's in the business, doesn't necessarily have the time to sit down and do this well.
Right.
So especially in this day and age, time is very limited. Also, to get to those corporate pricing is very difficult for smaller businesses.
Sure.
My career ended up at one of the largest paper merchants in the UK corporately, and ended up with a lot of corporate contracts. So those corporate contracts have paid me back in spades, because they've supported what we wanted to do with Procure.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, I mean, because obviously, I mean, right now, as I'm speaking to you, you're speaking from your war room in the company, because you've gone onto somewhat of a war footing of late. But yeah. I've heard that you can actually now hook me up with some PPE equipment and a few bottles of hand sanitizer. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
You're the man that can.
Well, yes, it's a very bizarre world. We have always, for the last year and a half, 2 years, supported care at home companies with stationery and PPE, and didn't, you know, coming up to the COVID situation, it was, we need to probably get this a little bit more sorted and see where we are. And we really, out of the bolt out of the blue, the head of one of the franchises rang us up and said, we need face masks and we need this quantity and we need them now. And it's just like, oh, well, we weren't quite ready for that. But yes, we can. We're just with the right, we just, because the way we work on commissions only. We don't charge our clients any money for what we do. We don't, all we do is ostensibly do the procurement for them.
Sure.
And find the best possible source at the best possible price. It doesn't affect their spend, their costings, any part of what they do. They just see a price from our supplier. And ultimately, they get a very good deal because we're buying in bulk. We're buying, of sure. course, not just for one company. We're buying for lots and lots and lots. And
you're that. Filling in that box and you say, like, how many do you need? A shitload.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, yeah, we're very keen not to be profiteer out of it.
Sure.
You know, it's we can see what's going on in the market. We can see the prices that are going out there. We've already refused a number of people who've offered to supply us different products at ridiculous pricing.
Yes.
And they go by the wayside until we get what we want, because it's you know, we've got a job to do and we've got a reputation to uphold, and my reputation means, and integrity means everything to me, and that's always been the same throughout my career.
And I can absolutely attest to that as well. I mean, you have always been, you know, an upstanding fellow as well. So I think it's, you know, it's nice to, you know, it's nice to see that even in times of crisis like this, you're still maintaining that integrity. So fair play to you. But I'd like to do, just move sideways a little bit. I'd like to do a little bit of what they call imagineering. And you know, given that the virus lockdown has kind of triggered a sort of a birth of new innovations like 3D printing and sort of being used more widely in house, or people making stuff from their living room, or innovating in the food and catering sector, or probably what's more relevant to you would be companies working in the sort of fintech and medtech sectors. As an independent company, I mean, such a crisis like this, you know, the upside to it, does it open up opportunities for you to work with kind of new and innovative startups that offer sort of different products and services?
It does indeed, yes. All the time we have, if it's not something to offer from our standard services, we also help companies with R&D tax credits.
Okay.
Every country, in most countries in the world, offer R&D tax credits, believe it or not. But it's understanding what you can get from it. And if you're a startup especially, and you're inventing something that has not been done at all, if you understand what you're inventing, and it is, usually it has to be innovative and advanced. Those are the two keywords in any R&D claim.
Sure.
If you've nailed those two in what you're doing, if you're a startup and those two things definitely come to mind, i.e. it's usually technology based. It's not often that it's not. There is some construction stuff that goes on that isn't necessarily. But as long as it fits those two main criteria, there is something there to be had. Now, if you understand how tax credits work, which quite often companies don't, the opportunities are quite significant, because it means that you can, especially if you're developing something, say it's a, I don't know, it's an app that flies planes the other side of the world from here, for instance. I mean, right. That's, that sounds crazy, but maybe someone does that. But thinking out the box slightly of some mad idea like that, you've developed some app that does that for you, that you can see, I don't know, gorillas, you know, somewhere in the middle of Malaysia because you've got a drone that's around then.
Or things that figure, I thought one that I saw the other day, which I thought was quite cool, was, you know, a company that developed an app for tracking expenditure in a family, in a company. So sort of expenses and stuff like that. And they were able to, it tabulated the whole thing for them. So.
Oh, well, absolutely. Not only does it save them money, but it will mean that they can finance their development, and that's the whole key with research and development.
Yep,
is that is if you're at the front end, especially at the front end, if you get those the right accounting right, and you can't, it's not something you can go and do yourself. It's very, you know, you need a specialised accountant to do it. Now I'm, you know, not a specialised accountant. I'll agree to that one. Hold my hand up, but we work with accountants who are ACCA qualified. They understand the R&D credits very clearly. They're also Law Society approved. And we can look at the in-depth workings of how that business is likely to set up. Maybe they're already set up and doing this already, but also they're in that position where they've developed something and they want to know how much the government are likely to pay back to them.
Right.
And that is so important. And if you set up properly as well, you'll make sure you get the most amount of money back. Now, if I tell you the sort of sums involved for any particular company or the percentages involved, you suddenly realise that it really is worthwhile doing.
Yeah.
So, for instance, let's take a company that spent £50,000 on the development of this crazy thing that goes, you know, flies airplanes around the world, or the other side of the world, to look at gorillas, for instance. Because it's all new technology, it's cost them £50,000. The government will pay 230% of that back.
Wow.
Yes. So, in other words, that company will now get £115,000 back.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say that, but my math is really shit. So, okay, so, but it's 200 and what percent?
230%. I mean, that's in round sort of figures. It's worked out on the basics,
right?
Basis of the technology and also the time involved, those people involved.
Okay.
So it's important to get to understand it. It's important to, if you've got that ability or you're setting a business up, that you speak to someone like us pretty quickly.
Yeah.
To get the parameters sorted out. So in a year, 2 years' time, you can work it out.
So you're kind of almost incubating on one end, you know, sort of with sort of companies that are developing things, and then you've got the sort of procurement side on the, you know, on the other end. So I mean, it is literally an end to end service.
It is, yes, very much so. Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, so it's amazing how the whole business works. People can't believe, and I can't believe it either. You know, I've been in business a long time. You know, I'd say getting on a bit, but I don't think I am at all.
You don't look it. You don't look it.
Thank you.
You might actually be getting on a bit, but you certainly don't look it.
No, thank you, darling. But, the one thing is, I think you can always learn new things and always learn how to deal with things all the time. And I read something the other day about you still continue to make new connections if you're willing and able to make them in your head, and they will develop your brain even further. And I must say that I think, you know, they say as you're older you get, you're more likely to be cast on the shelf, and I think complete opposite.
Yes.
The older I get, the better I am at thinking about things and also being able to put things to the table and also develop new ideas and also be able to understand the aspect of how the business is working. I've had to understand a lot more about procedures, but that's all always. I have had a lot of training on that, but then you know, I worked in a small company, aware of looking at mine eye when you need to.
But and, I mean, you only have to look at the great thinking heroes in our life to know that, you know, the pieces tend to fit together better as you start to become more conscious of the bigger picture and stuff. So not that this is about bigging up the old folks and trying to do down the younger ones, but it certainly does help to have a kind of a good sort of view on, you know, the way that things work as a you know, and that's just based on experience. I wanted to kind of flip the board slightly and get onto some of the sort of the core activities that directly affect your business that are basically about how you generate new clients. How, you know, because that obviously is the flavor of the podcast. And we touched upon your new brand, and congratulations, by the way. I think it's very nice looking. But with commercially kind of critical opportunities like networking and events and conferences being off the table for right now. I mean,
yeah.
What's your kind of most important mediums these days for finding new clients? I mean, do you use things like LinkedIn or webcasts, podcasts, and stuff like that? I mean, is that sort of a way for you to generate new business?
It is indeed. Yeah, LinkedIn obviously is a great medium for connecting with people. Obviously, if they want to connect with you too.
Sure.
But it's the way you go about it, and I think it's. The worst way about it is not coming across too salesy, because that just puts people off. And the whole aspect of networking, and I still network, by the way, where there's still some live networks going on.
I've seen you. You have. You used to. Well, up until obviously about 2 months ago. I mean, you held events and stuff. When you did some kind of local events and things, didn't you?
Yes, I did run a very small one up in a town called Tudbury in Suffolk.
Oh yes, I know.
Yes. So I did that for a little while. But I go to. I always was going to plenty of networking events, and the one thing about networking, and even doing the networking now online, is you're maintaining your presence and maintaining your connectivity with other people, and that comes back at you. Uh-huh. As long as you keep doing it, and as long as you develop a character within your group and you're known for doing certain things in certain ways, you will get people coming back to you regardless, because people go, oh, hang on a minute, I know whoever does this, does that. And you'll get referrals purely on the basis of that. And with the PPE, purely on the back of, and I worked this out the other day, because we're very much into bringing stuff over directly from China. We don't get Procure doesn't get involved completely directly, because we want to take a step outside of that, because we want other people to do all that work for us. But they do that, and that's my connections that has helped us get right to the direct source, get the best possible pricing that you could possibly get, because of our connections. And that, again, was a connection through a networking I went to two and a half years ago, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's come back at me, and it's proved its weight in gold.
It's a great point you raise, actually, because I had an interview about a month ago with a fella called Tom Cheesewright, and he's a futurologist, or, you know, he tends to look at, you know, sort of what's coming down the pike in, you know, sort of 5, 10, 15 years time. And I asked him the question. I said, well, you know, because he was talking about artificial intelligence and the role that will play in selling. And I said to him, I said, so, I mean, is AI actually going to kind of squash, you know, the sort of sales role from here on in? And it was quite nice of him, because he actually was very supportive of, you know, what people like, what you've just basically advocated there, which is the fact that, you know, there will always be a level of AI selling. So whether that could be your refrigerator talking to your grocery store and ordering milk when you're running out and all that sort of thing, you know, because that doesn't need, you know, that's still part of the sales process, but it's artificially intelligence driven.
Yes. And, love it.
But when you actually come to the sort of stuff that you're involved in, it's much more kind of emotional, and it's based on the fact that you have a relationship with somebody, and that is, you know, there's a lot of trust involved in that process, and that is stuff that machines will never be able to kind of replicate.
Absolutely. You can't, there's no substitute for personal contact and you know, personal relationships with people you meet on networking, because there's some people you're never going to connect with for whatever reason, but there's always people you are going to connect with. Mm-hmm. And those that you connect with, you've got to nurture them.
Yep.
And that's
your three rules, is it?
That is my three rules. Just keep nurturing them. Because it's that, you know, everyone knows you go networking and everyone goes, what do you do then? What do you do? And that's the key thing. But once you've been doing it a while, you learn not to just jump in. You learn to go off in an abstract way and be able to talk to people who sometimes you've never met before, and just talk to them in a way of, you know, understand that if you found out their company name or what they do before you even get there, understand that you've been developing, or you know that they like cricket or something. Go talk to them about something that is not key, but it's something that you can talk around, and eventually you come round to, and what was it that you do?
Yeah.
And because that they're slightly off, you know, it's then at the back of the conversation, you haven't jumped in, that person starts to appreciate you more and appreciate that you're not just, you know, it's desperation while you're there. And it's turned, that's key. Desperation, yes. Shows.
Don't show the sweat. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, it's funny because with everybody being in lockdown and the sort of sales relationships being interrupted right now, there's a lot of posts online about how to cultivate relationships and how to be useful, and, you know, how not to sell when you're trying to sell and all this sort of stuff. And it's quite interesting to, you know, to sort of read it, because it's like these things are fundamental to how people like you do business, and you've fundamental to how you've always been doing business. You know, it's not like you suddenly go, oh, now I got to be useful. It's like, well, I've always been useful. I've always been, you know, sort of trying to help people out, because, you know, that's always been part of your MO as a salesperson.
Yes, I would agree with that. It's funny, I've just done that for someone who on LinkedIn, barely know them. Yeah. Managing partner in a business, and the funding's gone out, but I've just linked them in with another managing partner of another law firm, because I know they'll probably help, or certainly Perfect. Do, you know, and it's those sort of connections that they might not be an obvious sort of thing to do, or an obvious gain or win or for me as an individual at all. I might never get anything out of it, but it's that help thing that I do enjoy doing, and it's that help thing that for me has paid off.
It's karma, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if it's karma, but it's keeping me calm. Yes.
very good. So looking, as we were talking about the future and stuff, I mean, where do you see sort of Procure adding value to companies in, say, 5 years time? I mean, are there areas that you're looking at that you see sort of coming on stream that are going to be more vital to business sort of in 5 years time?
Definitely. Actually, we're looking at something right now that, and you're talking about artificial intelligence. Mm. We are already looking at a different aspect of artificial intelligence on our website in the form of a bot. So,
right.
And we have all the right connections that we can possibly promote in the future. People can look at the site, understand it, see it. I'd like to think we might have this running within a week or two. Maybe it takes us a bit longer. But if you like what you see and you like the idea, then talk to us, because we can possibly help you out as a company, help companies out with their own bots, chat bots.
Cool. Excellent. Well, okay. Well, certainly bear that one in mind, and I'll make sure we put that in the show notes on the site as well. But I just wanted to ask you a bit of a surprise question, because I don't think we sort of touched on this. But I mean, looking back, sort of to Ian, sort of back in 1983. What piece of advice, if you could travel back in time, what piece of advice would you give Ian then that you picked up now?
that's a difficult question. I would certainly have said to myself, be more confident in your ability and in your own self. That you've got something that that people want, and I didn't realise that, and it's taken me a long time to understand that I have a different outlook on life, and that outlook on life, which is what you've sort of cornered me on, is being helpful to people and also being confident in myself. I didn't have enough confidence sometimes when I was younger, and if I picked that up, I would have gone and done a lot more, a lot quicker. And I think, in a way, that's a little bit of slow learning, maybe on my half. But I'm here now, and I'm loving every minute of it.
That's great. Well, that's a really nice, piece of advice to give yourself as well. But on the relaxing side of things, I teased a little bit earlier about our musical connections together, and I always kind of admired your guitar playing, because you always brought a kind of a touch of Nile Rodgers to a rock band, and I was always kind of impressed with that maroon sunburst guitar of yours. And are you still playing?
Yes, I don't play in bands anymore. I do jam nights occasionally when I get. If I've practiced enough, but sure. At the moment I don't get a lot of time to practice, so
especially not now.
But I do need it. Actually, it's a nice influence to have, is music, because yes. I can, and I did at the weekend. I played a bit, to be honest with you. I've got a piano, so I played a bit of piano as well. So just to keep my hand in, just to relax, just to play a little bit, and if I get to the point when pubs open again, maybe I'll go back and do a few more jam nights.
Well, because I think I told you, didn't I? Our mutual acquaintance Peter Banks actually wrote the theme tune for our show as well. So
yes, indeed.
It's nice to keep. It's I think it's always good to have those kind of relationships, those band relationships, because I think you learn a lot in the early days. You don't realise it at the time, but you learn a lot about cooperation and working together when you're very, very young. Learning to, you know, to let other people come forward and you step back and all that sort of stuff. Those are very interesting lessons to learn that I think people, you know, shouldn't forget when they're when they're doing it. It's one thing that a lot of people should bring away, whether they're successful or not, from being in a band. It's always quite interesting to know. But when you're kind of not procuring things and saving companies and you're not playing guitar, I mean, sort of outside of music and stuff, I mean, what is your kind of your go-to when it comes to relaxing? What do you tend to do?
Extreme sports.
Really?
Well, one of them is, yeah, I've always windsurfed since I was about 28, and then I learned to kite surf.
You had a wetsuit, didn't you? I always remember you had a wetsuit. That's correct.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. So I sailed for a bit. I learned to sail over there, but went back to windsurfing. Then I thought, hey, there's got to be an easy way around this. And watching all the kite surfers with a backpack and a board, and I'm thinking, now that's the way to travel, isn't it? All you need is a board and a backpack that's got your kite in it. So lo and behold, 5 years later now, I'm kite surfing regularly when I'm allowed to. Obviously you're not allowed to at the moment, but Yeah, absolutely love it. I cycle to keep fit. Can't play squash anymore because the back and the knees are a bit knackered.
Yeah. See, that's why I never played squash. I knew I'd need my knees when I'm in my 50s, you know.
Absolutely. good advice, that one.
the old prayer bones.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. If anyone's listening and playing squash, yeah, when you get to about 50-odd, then it's time to think about...
Don't do it!
Do it. Don't do it, yeah, because it does knacker you up far too much. So, yeah, so I cycle, play golf, and kite surf.
Fantastic, fantastic. Yeah. I tried to take up golf about 5 years ago, and you see, I'm one of those people, and it's a horrible character flaw that I have, but it's like I refuse to do something that I'm going to be shit at. All right. And that was the thing. I mean, I could never get over the fact that playing golf, and I tried for about 2 years, and you know, that because it's just a learning curve, and it's a very long, slow learning curve. And I couldn't stand just taking up something where I was always going to be beaten. So I actually stopped doing it, you know, and I'm now trying to find a sport that I can play and beat everybody else, but I still haven't found it yet. So
no, that's, not racket. What's the trying to think of it now.
Solitaire. I'm pretty unbeatable.
Solitaire. That's a sport.
But look, this is the point in the show when I sort of hand over to our guests and tell us, so they can tell us what they're up to, what they'd like folks to know about, how they can get hold of you, and if they want to pick up what you're putting down. So over to you then, Ian. So what's going on in the world of Procure right now, and how can people reach you?
Right. Well, Procure at the moment is very heavily into helping clients with PPE, but ostensibly as a business, we help all clients that come to us, and the ones that we talk to and find. Quite often we're talking to accountants, solicitors, building companies, FM companies, so FM management services. And we do a whole range of products and services, which, as I said before, were mobiles, stationary, obviously PPE, MPS, which is in old money copiers. But we deconstruct the deals, VoIP systems, iPhone systems. Mm-hmm. But it's in, you know, even car leasing, insurance. And you think, crikey, that's an awful lot of things that we're covering. How can we cover it so well? Well, obviously we've got experts that sit behind us. They help us do all the pricing and get to the nub of the business to make sure that we've got exactly the right prices for you, and also save you all the time in research. So that's what we do as a business. It just so happens, obviously, the world's upside down in its head at the moment. But one of the key things, if I could advise anyone out there at the moment, if you've got premises and you've got energy, commercial premises that cost you quite a bit of money, then it's certainly well worth giving us a call or giving an energy company a call, because prices are on the floor at the moment. And if your contracts are up within the next year, they can be locked in at the price they are today. That is a key bit of advice today, is to do that. Trying to help people, that is definitely what you should be doing, because you're going to save a lot of money. Prices have never been so low and never likely to be as this low again.
So, how about that? Sound advice and well dispensed, Ian. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Excellent. You made it. Well, listen, Ian, congratulations. Thanks so much for talking to me. Your website, I will put the link to it on the show notes anyway. But it's procure.com, isn't it? And it's Procure, P-R-O.
No, Procure. procure.uk.
.uk, okay.
Yes, .uk. It's very simple, straightforward. You can get us on that, or call us, whatever you want. They've got phone numbers, On the actual website, and they'll come straight through to me anyway.
Perfect.
So,
all right. Well, yeah. Listen, Ian, you're still a star to me. You always
Thank
will
you.
Be. And I wish you the very best of luck with your new brand and the company. And I hope you come back on the show at some point in the future, and we can talk shop. But I really appreciate you putting some time aside to speak to us. And
it's been a pleasure. Thank
all right.
You
well,
much.
Listen, you take care, Ian. You take care.
Okay. Cheers, Chris. All the best.
See ya. So that's another episode done and off to the British Library for future generations to look back on and learn what goes on in the minds of today's captains of industry. It's worth bearing in mind that not everyone has hit the pause button, not by a long shot. There are still companies working away and keeping the country on course for a recovery. And when it comes, whether it's this year or next year, these are the future winners. So don't tell me I've got nothing to do. Don't just sit there counting flowers on the wall. Think laterally and get your new business into gear, because standing still is actually falling behind. It remains for me to thank Ian for being such a great guest, my co-producer Donna for her help putting this episode together, our team at Quijibo Design, and of course, musical director Peter Banks for the music. So we'll catch you next time around on the Fuel Podcast, when we'll be giving out more help and advice for communications and marketing agencies that have a vested interest in winning new business. And really, shouldn't that include you?